All right. Cat, what are you doing? Get out of the way. Coming through. I'm hiding my headset from the cat so she doesn't destroy it. Whoops. Microphone fell out. It's not good. Probably have to edit that out. Ow! I am not totally comfortable with them yet. But I know I got them in the right way. Just feeling awkward.
I have my hands over my ears. Do I sound funny to you? I'll bet I do.
Okay. I think it is too windy out here to record. So, as irritating as it is, I'm going back in. And now I am back in the house. Well, tried to make one tape, didn't work, let's try it again. I'll start recording. I don't want to get all trying to be all good at it and everything. Well, my name is Jeff Armstrong, and today I'd like to try to do a career cast, recording of my history. There's not enough time or tape or whatever in the world to do a history of my life, but or anybody's for that matter, not me in particular, just everybody. So I'll try to hit the salient points as we go. I'll start off saying that my schooling time was a mix of public school and the blind school in Indiana. And I grew up in Indianapolis. On the far east side of town in a little area they call Irvington, which was originally planned as an artist community back in the late 1800s. So it's this area with lots of windy streets and interesting houses, lots of very interesting types of construction. Quite a diversity. And pretty much like a lot of other people have said, grew up, you know, riding my bike around and playing with the neighborhood kids. Very sort of a normal average kid. Never really thought too much about being different when I was little. The older I got, the more I knew from people's reactions and from my own experiences that I was different from my friends or my cousins or whoever else I would play with. Had a lot of wrecks on my bike, ran it into some trees and telephone poles and, you know, but loved to ride that thing as fast as I could get it going. And, you know, again, took off a lot of skin on the sidewalk, a lot of road rash, if you will. And, you know, love to play kickball and all these other things like kids did. We used to play in the street. I don't know that nobody probably lets their kids do that anymore, but we used to organize kickball games and play in the street next to my mom's house and ride our bikes. Heck, we were allowed to go miles in any direction we wanted to. Again, I know that's, I'd never let my own children do that when they were growing up. So, you know, obviously something has changed. And We were a lot freer back then, I think. We didn't have the alternatives either. I mean, kids have computers and video games and things like that, which we didn't have. At least, I seem to come in right, you know, be born in the time, I'm 42, so I was born in the time when all those things were sort of in their infancy or actually in their development, not quite ready for, you know, consumers or whatever. Anyway, I went to school in public school in what was referred to as a sight-saving class, which was, it was a class in a public school, but it had been equipped for kids with a visual impairment. We had large print books, we had lots of blackboard space, and the teachers used these chalks that were, gosh, at least like half, three-quarters of an inch in diameter that left these really huge, thick, bright yellow letters up on the blackboard. It was an open concept classroom where the teacher taught three grades at a time, and she divided her time equally between you. And the only things you went out of the classroom for were lunch, PE, a couple times a week, no, every day, yeah, it was every day. Art was a couple times a week, yeah, and then recess, which was right after lunch. Got along with that through the fourth grade, and my parents were looking for an alternative because the school where they had the sight-saving class was pretty rough. There was a lot of, really to be honest, a lot of racial unrest around the time I started school in 69-70, and there was a lot of violence going on the buses. I needed to take two buses to and from school, and just a lot of opportunities to get something going, get beat up, and I was getting beat up a lot, and I was a real small kid, and I hate to say it, but you know, my remembrance is that Indianapolis was quite a racially explosive town. There were race riots. There were. It seemed to be pretty pervasive. I can recall, you know, going out with my cousins to the public swimming pool, and it seemed like every outing ended in some kind of a fight between kids based on their race. And I just remember there was always some kind of fight in everything we did while we were out in the public, you know, when we were kids. Not like around our house, because let's face it, my neighborhood was pretty much all white people. But, you know, when you get out in more downtown area, we were about 6 miles out of downtown. So when you'd get a little closer to downtown, it was a lot more mixed races, neighborhoods, and just seemed like there was a lot of it there in town. And of course, now after growing up, I've done research on different things. You know, I like to just read on the internet and look up history, and in looking up the history of the area where I grew up, come to find out that the KKK was very active in that area, and I believe our mayor was involved at one point. I cannot remember the name of the particular mayor, but I guarantee you that it was the mayor of Indianapolis who was involved in the KKK and eventually went to prison for taking part in some kind of murder or something. But I'd have to look it all up again. Anyway, it's pretty nasty business, and it's way off to the side of where I'm supposed to be talking. But that's important because all that violence led my parents to put me at the blind school where they felt I would be a little safer. And so in the fourth grade, and got the marching orders to go over to the blind school. And that was up on the north end of town, which is actually quite a distance from my parents' house, probably half an hour to 45-minute drive. And consequently, I was not a day student. I shipped off to school on Sunday evening, and I was there until Friday afternoon. And I did that routine pretty much solid. I had 1 year where I went back to public school in the sixth grade, but that didn't work out either. But short of that, I was there from the fourth grade through the 11th grade. And I would say educationally, it was a golden opportunity. You know, our class sizes were tiny. My math classes never had more than four or five students. Most of my classes were 10 or under. My actual class, had we all stayed at the blind school and graduated there, would have been a dozen kids. And it would have been one of the biggest classes they had had in a long time. So the classes there didn't regularly get much over, you know, 8 or 9, 10 kids. Excuse me. So I eventually, in the 11th grade, along with my parents, decided that things were just not working for me at the blind school. We had some interesting staff there who had sort of had some previous experiences in prison, and got interesting, they seemed to have a little too much interest in the kids there. So I'm not going any further on that one, but thank God I made it out of their hole, and I can't necessarily say that everybody did. But I went back to public school, and I'm not breezing over it. I just don't know what to say or what I can say that would do justice to that whole thing. It's huge, and it's unfortunate that at those institutions there were those people hired on who basically looked at the school as a wolf looks at a pasture of sheep. The vulnerability of young blind children, you know, they have some special needs, and I maintain that they were more vulnerable than your average child, and being that they were away from their families, very lonely children, very much depended on the house parents and the other staff of the school, and unfortunately they were not reliable. They were actually in many cases criminal in nature, and so yeah, it's nasty. It's a nasty business. And I'm gonna leave it there if I can. So we'll skip to public school in the junior year of high school. Going back to public high school, this time being mainstreamed instead of any kind of special class, it was quite an adjustment. The kids were still reasonably violent, and I found out very quickly that wearing my very thick glasses really shone a spotlight on me, and you know, made me a target. So I stopped that fairly soon after starting public school. I quit wearing my glasses and tried to do anything I could to learn how to look, dress, and act like all the other kids so that I wouldn't stand out so much and be such a target. So, and that was successful. But mainly, I had done a lot of the work that the kids in public school spread out over their career as far as you know, getting their credits in. The blind school, that's one thing about it, they were very strict about, you know, you had every year you took an English course, you took a mathematics course, you took PE, you took some sort of art / home ec / shop class, something like that. Lots of music involvement and sports, athletics. Mostly for me, and at the blind school, I was involved in music. I took the trumpet starting when I started there, pretty much. Maybe the fifth grade, I think it was, we started, and played trumpet from then on. Learned guitar from some of the other guys when I was in grade school, and tried out quite a number of other instruments when I got older, and just got kind of bored sometimes. And played in the band, played in the jazz band. We started a little rock combo. Well, we didn't start it; it existed. We took over a rock combo, should I say? And kind of was one of these, like, it was like a perpetual band at the school. And you know, as other kids would grow up and graduate, other younger guys would come in and take their place, and it was kind of neat. And all that was done by the band instructor or instrumental music instructor. There, great guy. He was really went out of his way to help the kids. He spent long hours that we probably never appreciated and never even understood how hard that was. He was there sometimes until, God, 7, 8 at night practicing with us for our jazz band. We had like a 40s era type sound, you know, Benny Goodman, you know, that kind of sound. Did all the old classics of Glenn Miller arrangements and some of these, and a lot of fun. Went to back, and I was in the student council, had involvement there too. See, you really had so few students, everybody got involved in everything just about, and it was a heck of an experience as far as that level. During the day while you were at school, it was pretty good. The problems came in the dormitory and the staff that they would hire there, very substandard, from the dean of students, which in that school meant in charge of the dormitory life, not anything to do with school, on down to his assistants and the house parents that took care of the kids. Just abysmal, pathetic excuse for any kind of a responsible adult. And so, from that aspect, it was a joy to go back over to public school, but there was nothing to do, because people had basically formed their cliques and had their friends, and, you know, I got there, and basically I just concentrated on finishing my schooling and graduating, which I did do in 81, and moved on to Ball State University for major in computer science and a minor in marketing. Did about a year of that, and heard about a training program being offered by the Rehab Institute in Indianapolis, which was a computer programmer training, 10-month course. Would give you the equivalent of a bachelor's degree when you were finished, and that was a great program. It was well run, two great professors, Dr. Koleski and Jim Hubbard, very, very good instructors. They knew their business. And so we finished that program, did quite well, learning assembly language and COBOL programming, and learning some of the information about the IBM mainframes we used to work on, the VM370 series, which is also what was at both of the places I interned with. Generally, you do an internship to, you know, to learn about that job and to give you on-the-job training, but you're also, while you're doing that, you're also hoping that it's going to turn into a job. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people, the same way they use a temp agency, they get a temporary job and they hope it turns into something permanent a lot of times. Neither one of my internships did that. They neither one had any availability for hiring. I did an internship for a couple of months with the Indiana Bell as they were divesting from AT&T, and later did an internship with what's now known as Bank One, and had what I felt like good success there, wrote some good programs, take care of some real important issues they had, billing. I mainly seemed to end up writing accounting software, which is probably my strong suit. Thought that's what I was going to be doing the rest of my life. And I met my wife in shortly after the last internship, or as it was ending. And she's from Minnesota and grew up in St. Paul here. After we met, she convinced me at one point that she knew some folks who were hiring, and you know, some had some contacts here in the Twin Cities, and it is a better job market. It always has been a better job market up here than in Indianapolis. It's a bigger market, for one thing. There's just a heck of a lot more people. And, you know, with the Twin Cities metro area, we've got a couple of million people up here. And probably spread out over, I want to guess, about twice the landmass, you know, at least half and again anyway, the landmass of Indianapolis here in the Twin Cities. And so anyway, I came up here to look for employment and ended up staying. Did several interviews and looked for several months in the industry, and basically was being told at the time that they were laying off all their inexperienced programmers with these associate degrees. I hope I said associates before about the training program, because that was the outcome. They called it a certificate. Anyway, they were laying off programmers, and all the places I looked, the advice they gave me was go back to school, get your four-year degree, get on somewhere and get some experience. And hang on a second. Okay, that mic just felt like it was falling out. I went to the state of Minnesota and to the State Services for the Blind, and I talked to their placement specialist, and they told me that yes, really to get employment, the way the market was going at that time, there were a lot of places were downsizing their programming staff, and so in order to really get a good paying position, I needed to go back and finish my degree, which would have taken about another 2 years had I chosen that path. But again, as luck would have it, while I'm there, I hear about another training program, which is a training program for the vending machine industry, their business enterprise program for the blind. Sounded intriguing to me because I'd always been fascinated by mechanical things, and you know, my dad was an airplane mechanic in the Air Force, and I had seen a lot of that kind of thing. He always worked on cars, and I always wanted to be able to, you know, assist him in that kind of thing. But I was always one of these kids tearing everything apart: radios, TVs, you know, old typewriters, whatever you had around, I'd tear it apart to try to see how it worked and put it back together. So, you know, when it was explained to me that what you learn in this training program is how to repair these machines and how to operate them, how to fill them, basically everything from soup to nuts in the vending business, and that you would, at the end of the time, be able to take over a business for yourself and be responsible for the maintenance of all the machines while earning the profits, from the machines sounded pretty interesting to me, so I went and checked that out, because that was a six-month training program, and that, at the time, now at this point, I am about 21 years old, and that's looking pretty good to me, because I've now been, you know, out of high school for 3 years. I've been through a year of college and a 10-month training program, and I'm kind of burned out. I've been in school, seems like, you know, well, I had been in school my whole life, since I could remember, and was just tired of it, and I wanted a quick way to get a job. Hang on just a second. I'm going to pause. Okay. A little drink of water. The training program took me in there, and I did the 6 months of training, and did a little over 2 months of OJT, and started working for people. I'm making money, good money, for the first time ever. I had had experiences when I was younger, while I was going to school, in the summers between school. I had gotten experience doing all kinds of odd jobs, you know. I worked for this old man around the block who would hire boys to cut down trees and load. We had some railroad tracks that were being removed in our area, so he'd hire us to go down there and load railroad ties into his pickup truck, and he'd sell them for landscaping. And unfortunately for him, he would also burn them in his fireplace, which they're treated with creosote, so it's not really a good idea. Needless to say, between that and the Pall Malls he smoked, the walls of his house, I don't know if they were painted or paper, but at one point they had been white, I guess, and the walls and ceilings in there were all sort of a medium to light brown color from all the tar, you know, and everything, and God knows he was breathing that in. He died pretty young, in his 60s. I'm good at getting off on a tangent, if you can't tell. This guy hired a lot of us young guys for like $3 an hour, which was not, I think minimum wage at the time was $3.35 an hour, and he'd hire us for $3 an hour just to do manual labor. So that was my working experience, along with the internships in the computer industry, in programming, and now the on-the-job training in the vending program. And I worked off and on, mostly on. That's a nice thing about that. Once you're trained, there's lots of guys who want to go on vacation and things like that. So I worked pretty solid for about 6 months, till a location came open, and took that over. And I was at my first location, rather small location, for small meaning not much money, for about a year and a half, and then moved to the location I'm in now, and that was in 88, so I started in 86, I started in 85 to train, and in 86 got my first place, and 88 got my second place, and have been there ever since up until this day. It's an interesting job. It's an interesting career. I work alone most days. You know, I exchange a lot of highs and how you doings with customers, and you know, I have occasional interaction with other vendors and suppliers that come in and make deliveries, and of course the staff back at the main office that administrates the program. And I would say, from my experience from programs all over the country, that this one seems to be one of the best, and I have nothing to gain by claiming that. I just, you know, I know, I think the one in Indiana is a pretty good one too. A friend of mine is in that. A couple friends of mine are in that, actually. The one guy that I email with from time to time is a friend from high school. But, you know, it's a physical job. There's a lot of pounding the hard floors and cartloads of stuff, loading pop, and, you know, there's a lot of just manual labor in it. I like that sort of thing. I'd say, if anything, the job lacks in some ways because it's kind of a lonely job. I mean, you aren't really having conversations with anybody. If you are, you're not getting any work done, for the most part. Your hands have to be, you need both hands, and you need to concentrate because there's some dangerous things that you mess with as far as just a lot of edges on metal equipment and things like that. And you need to pay attention to what you're doing. So you really can't, like, grab a cell phone and, you know, call somebody up or whatnot. You know, I've had my share of lovely injuries from lack of concentration. Just a couple weeks ago, I sliced my finger pretty good and got about 5 stitches with my box cutter. Just takes a second of not paying enough attention, and you've done something really dumb like that. Anyway, that's already healed up, thank goodness. But, that's about where my career is. I see myself doing this, you know, from now on out. I mean, it's made me decent money. You know, you're not going to get rich doing this. But it's good, solid employment. It's allowed me to afford a decent lifestyle. My wife does the same thing. Her history is pretty much similar. Just, you know, when she'll tell you that herself some point. She says that she really wants to use these microphones that I got, the binaural microphones, and just see what it sounds like to record on them, because she was just blown away with the test recordings that I made, you know, walking around the yard and the neighborhood and stuff. It does, I mean, it's kind of wasted on this stuff here, but for the sound seeing stuff, it's going to be awesome, and it is already awesome, because I hear Larry's stuff, the pumpkin picking, and the you know, the zoo and the farm and the walks to work and all that stuff. I love that kind of stuff. That's just me. I'm a kind of a high-stress guy, so when I come home from work, the idea of sitting down and listening to somebody else talk is just very relaxing with those, you know, with the traffic and the wind and the people noises, and I don't know. That's kind of stuff I like. I'm good with that. And especially when it's got good information in there. I mean, listening to those podcasts so far, I've learned how to operate my iRiver, learned about these microphones, learned about podcasting, lots of other stuff. I just can't, you know, figure it all or remember it all at this point. But let's see here. Goodness. Well, I guess I could say that my hobbies, main hobbies, and I do spend a bit of time on them, playing my guitars. I have several guitars, and I love to play. Sometimes I'll play along with CDs for practice, just to try to keep up with, you know, current music and knowing how to play and something that's demanding. Then I'll just play on my own. I like to sing, and I play a little bit of piano. I tinker on that thing. We have one we got for my daughter. I have 2 kids. My daughter is going to be 20 here in a bit, a couple months, and my son turned 18 in May. And they're both going to college right now. They have the same issues I had as far as part of it, just not knowing what they want to do when they grow up. I still don't know. I mean, I don't know what I'd want to do, given any choice of anything. So, I mean, this is good enough for me right now. The hours are decent. Pay's good. Physical job, so, I mean, you do have to experience a lot of pain in that you pull things from time to time, and I work out and I'm in pretty good shape, and you know, most of the guys I know do some kind of athletic stuff or work out to try to, you know, make sure they're staying in good shape. But it is some days just so heavy. Lots of lifting. And of course, your lower back can really take a beating. But so I'd say by now, I used to be big into the beat baseball and the goal ball and blind bowling. I'm not into all that anymore. I have had a couple of really good injuries and scared me that I wasn't going to be able to work anymore. Tore my shoulder rotator cuff a couple of times. Tore one of my quadricep muscles once. And injured my low back a couple times lifting weights. I used to be in powerlifting when I was younger, back in my 20s. All those things have kind of come and gone for me just because I got rid of all those heavy weights and things that I used to own and have gone down to one of these, you know, little squared-off home gym-type situations that where you can, you know, do the different exercise, do 40 different exercises or whatever. It's got a seat and all this stuff, and that's plenty right there. Keeping in good shape is, lifting the heavy weights is dangerous. So you really shouldn't be doing the really heavy weights unless you intend to use that. And nobody needs to be able to, you know, lift 300, 400, 500 pounds on a daily basis. It's not helping you with your job or anything. I still do work out with weights, my wife and I. And we have a treadmill. We like to run on that. And I do a lot of stuff with the computer. I do a lot of genealogy research. I've gotten pretty good at it. I've been doing it now for about 7-8 years. Started doing that when my dad passed away back in 95. I started to question, you know, the origins of our family, and he had never really talked about that. His family wasn't very close, and so I really had no knowledge of my family's origin, and just got really interested in that, and I've really gotten into it. I just belong to a lot of places, that, you know, clubs and sites and lists and mail lists and whatever else that have to do with the places that my family's from, which is a whole nother thing, long and drawn out and probably pretty boring. But, you know, to you, your family's really exciting usually, and probably to other people it's like, okay, that's nice. probably bores people to tears the way I go on and on about stuff, but I just find it very fascinating how people end up, just as we were talking about with the careers, how all these little accidents or decisions or, you know, sort of quick interactions and things you don't even realize are going to affect you so greatly. You know, how would I know, you know, being at the blind school in Indianapolis, that someday I'd be living in St. Paul, Minnesota, up here where it's cold all the dang time, and winter lasts from about any day now to sometime in May, usually. You know, right around Memorial Day is really seriously, I mean, it's our pools open then, just like everybody else's probably, but it's for a reason, because it's too dang cold to go in the water anywhere in this state before then, and even after sometimes, it's just ice cold. At some point, I hope to take this recording setup up to Duluth, which is one of my favorite places to visit, which is about 3-4 hours north of here, going up Highway 35, is right on the right on Lake Superior, and it is the hub of a majority of the Great Lakes shipping, steel industry, iron ore, you know, grains. There's just a huge amount of shipping that goes through there, and there's a long history going back to the French fur traders and the logging camps and all that, and it's just a place that's full of sounds, and for me anyway, I just love going up there. It's a whole nother atmosphere, and it's a place where you can relax. There's just nothing up there to bother you. And you kind of, wherever you're at within reason, like we were up there this last, when were we up there? August, I think it was. I think the high for the day was in the mid-60s, and from the hotel room you could hear the waves hitting the shore. It's kind of a rocky, sandy and rocky shoreline there, and there's a lighthouse, probably was within about a half a mile from our hotel room, and you hear horns from the boats, horns from the lift bridges. You could, if the weather's right, you could hear fog horns. There are bells. There's a lot of little sounds like that. You know you're on the water when you're up there, and it's very enjoyable. And even now, when I have lost the vision in one eye, and the other eye is down to kind of light perception and shadows, it doesn't seem to make a difference. I guess the things I could see before, I still imagine them, or they just weren't what it was all about. But anyway, I hope to make a recording of some goings on up there and bring it back to you, so you can get an idea of what that's like. There's plenty around here, of course, where I live. There's the Mississippi River, and there is all kinds of stuff. There's all kinds of history here, but anyway, that's besides the point. So I'm gonna probably have to do a lot of editing to this, because it's rambly and long. So I'm gonna go ahead and make a sign-off thing that I can cut out and use at the end. So just to say, I appreciate having the opportunity to tell you a little bit about myself. And hope I get another chance to record things for the podcast, some interesting things. I've got some interesting trips coming up soon. I just don't know how widespread the interest would be. A couple weeks I'm going to Atlanta for the National Vending Convention, and we're going to be visiting the world of Coca-Cola. I don't know if there's anything there of any audio interest, but I'll keep the equipment with me just in case. And like I said before, I do look forward to taking this with me some places around the state that are of interest. There's some nice waterfalls around here, and some other really interesting natural features. And there is a lot of, water-wise, there's a lot of things to be done around here with water, given the Mississippi River and the Lake Superior and all of that. So, hopefully you'll be hearing from me again.